Good morning. It is 9 a.m. on 10-10-12, October 10-12. I think that's lucky. I'm not sure. You're listening to Good Morning Atlanta on Business Radio X, a proud 2012 member of Central Atlanta Progress. You can learn more about Central Atlanta Progress at atlantadowntown.com. Of course, you're listening right here on Business Radio X, where we are also a partner. What are we, a partner of the World Trade Center? I have the wrong script in front of me. Help me out, Elizabeth. It's
They're official sponsor of the Good Morning Atlanta show.
Thank you
show.
So much. I have my old script.
So thank you, World Trade Center Atlanta.
And that's WTC Atlanta. Is that their website? WTCAtlanta.com.
Exactly.
Okay. So clearly, we had technical difficulties on the computer this morning. I love that. And I've only had one cup of coffee.
Uh-oh. Look out.
I know. It's always bad. I have another one sitting here, so hopefully I will catch up. But
plus, we've got a rockin' studio this morning.
We do.
With three totally awesome guests. So they're going to keep us energized and excited and have a lot of great information to share with us.
Hopefully they won't be too taxing because I'm having that kind of day.
Hopefully they'll take it easy on you.
That's right.
As you warm up.
Exactly.
To things. So Bob Pertierra is here with the Metro Atlanta Chamber of Commerce, and he is going to talk to us all about TIACA, which is this world's largest air cargo conference that just took place here in Atlanta. So, Bob, welcome. Glad to have you.
Good morning.
We have also got with us in the studio this morning Dana Patrick Fitzpatrick from Atlanta Retail Consulting. Patrick has a lot of information to share with us about what's going on in the retail scene and what good retailers are doing in these current economic times, what they could be doing better.
I like the face Elizabeth's making at him, like, right? You have that information for us,
I'll
right?
I'll certainly try my best. And good morning.
Good morning to you, Patrick. We're thrilled to find out more about what you do at Atlanta Retail Consulting. And, of course, our favorite guest, a regular here on GMA, Dan Williams with Central Atlanta Progress is here.
You're too kind. You're too kind.
And
thanks
it's
for
like,
having me. On short notice, no less. So
I know. We
great.
Love it. And we have a lot of events to talk about today. So everybody's got events coming up. We're going to get to all that. Of course, before we do that, we got to get to the headlines. And before we get to the headlines, I have to just say a little observation from coming in this morning. I was thinking about Dan and his lack of car. Dan is now Carless Dan.
That's
kind
right.
of like Shoeless Joe Jackson. He's Carless Dan.
Carless Dan. All right.
Yeah. All right. And I was
like the eco hero, superhero.
I know. I love that.
And I don't even have a license plate to put that on. I have to put it on a business card.
Maybe on a bike.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, okay.
And right. And speaking of bikes, this is the comment I was going to make. I just have been noticing because, you know, I'm outside walking around in Midtown quite a bit, walking my dog and whatever. And then I hop into my car and drive places. But I was noticing, I've been noticing over the last however many months, I'm seeing more and more people on alternative forms of transportation, be it their feet, like Dan, MARTA a little bit, and we're going to jump into a MARTA story here in a minute, but bicycles. I've been seeing a lot more bicycles and even Segways, not going to lie. There's a guy in my building who rides a Segway like all the way up into his apartment, and then I see him on the streets. He works across the street here at the 191 building, and yeah, he said the gas was ridiculous. And it's just so easy. He rides around on a Segway. It's great.
Yeah, I was reading that bicycles in Atlanta are on the rise. And there's a lot of plans. Well, now with, you know, half the Beltline built.
Right.
There's a lot of plans to add new infrastructure that's going to be very bicycle friendly.
Bike shares and all kinds of things. Get ready.
I know. It's very exciting. I've seen that in other cities. It'll be interesting to see it come to life here. And I have to say, this is what really made me want to talk about this. So this morning I was out walking the dog. And this woman rode by on a bicycle, and it was kind of, it wasn't, you know, it was like an upright kind of old school bike with a basket kind of thing. But this is the part that got my attention. She was wearing heels, riding her bike.
Awesome.
Riding her bike to work in her pumps with her hair pinned up and her like professional trench coat and pants, but not a skirt, but pumps. And I was thinking, Elizabeth, do you think you could do that? Because I'm pretty sure I couldn't do that.
No.
Great
style. There's no
Great
way.
Style.
I wish I had a picture of her.
That is impressive. I mean,
that's a skill. Like that you need a certification course.
Well, and you know what it is? It's confidence. Because it's not the actual doing of it that's difficult, but if you have any problem and you have to quickly get your foot out of that pedal or do, you know, you're wearing pumps. So that is just she just knows she's a good bike rider and she can handle it. I was super impressed.
I am super impressed.
All right. Anyway.
Thanks for the bicycle update.
You know, that's what I'm here for. Okay, so moving on to MARTA. New MARTA CEO, highly
right.
regarded at the job he just left. That's good. So what do you think about that, Elizabeth? Are we
it's a good I think we're going to see some changes and improvements to what's happening with MARTA. I mean, that's what you see when you see a change of leadership. Somebody comes in with fresh ideas and fresh perspective. It's good to know that the people he worked with.
Well, and he's coming from San Antonio, from their transit system, and has a good reputation there. And I think worked in Charlotte also, correct? And Dan's nodding. Uh-huh, yeah. And so, Dan, as a regular MARTA rider, what needs to be fixed? What can do? What kind of fresh ideas can he inject into MARTA?
MARTA is ripe for opportunities for improvement.
Well, you know, we discussed some of the last show. Obviously, there was this big KPMG report that came out that we discussed actually the last time I was on here. And so they have some ideas. You know, they're obviously at the bottom line is the bottom line that MARTA needs to raise revenues become more sustainable economically. And our friend here from the chamber may have ideas. Bob probably talks to Dave Williams and some of the folks over there and at the chamber, and they have ideas. And I think there's what I can say about MARTA without getting too specific is just that there's a lot of people that care a lot. I think right now, especially with the discussion of T-SPA still kind of fresh on people's mind, there's a real willingness to tackle the issues related to MARTA and move forward. Everywhere I go, people are talking about how we can improve our public transit system. And I think, you know, the streetcar that will be completed late next year, I think will Atlanta streetcar that runs from Centennial Park to the King Center, I think will provide people a new, fresh perspective on what public transportation can be, and give MARTA an opportunity for some kind of upgrading of its brand. You know,
now,
it'll look something. It'll be something that's different.
Will it be part of the MARTA system? Is it technically
MARTA will manage the streetcar?
Okay.
There's right now we're in the construction phase, but MARTA will manage the day-to-day operations.
So will it have MARTA branding on it?
No, it'll actually have the Atlanta streetcar branding.
Okay.
But the breeze card will be the same.
Okay.
You may see MARTA here and there, you know, in the interior of the car. I'm not sure on the specifics, but the branding of the car will be the new Atlanta streetcar brand, which we're kind of slowly unveiling in bits and pieces. So
now, I'm not a branding expert, but we do have a retail expert in the room, so maybe you can chime in on this, Pat. But it seems to me that it would be good for MARTA to have their brand kind of attached to the streetcar, no?
Well, I think so, and I think they will. I think they will do that. I think we want the streetcar to be branded as something new, as something fresh, and to help people understand that this is a new concept. It is a new. It's a new type of car. It's a new type of way to get around. The streetcar versus heavy rail is a concept that I think it's going to take Atlantans a little while to get used to, and so it's important that the cars look different and have a little bit of a different look. But we want the operations, the breeze car, the way the system works, to be very seamless.
Yeah, okay.
And it creates more or less a sub brand within the MARTA name, which is good, and you can build off the positive aspects of the MARTA name and then go in another direction with the breeze car.
I think, too, any great city needs a transit system and different mechanisms for people to get around, whether it's bikes or trains or streetcars. But I think the important thing is making it easy for somebody who's new or somebody who lives here to quickly go from one mode to the other and get where they need to go.
Well, the thing is, here in Atlanta, as much as we love our cars, and we do love our cars, when you are out and about in a downtown area, certainly, but even in any of the sort of more city areas, citified areas, I guess, it just makes it look more vibrant to have people on foot and people coming in and out of the MARTA tunnels and people on bikes and even people on Segways. I mean, you know, it just, you see more people out and about.
Sure.
The traffic is sort of not pretty to look at.
Right.
In fact, I joke all the time with my boyfriend that half the places you can sit in Atlanta to eat, you just sit and watch a parking lot. Like, there, you know, in other cities, you sit on a street corner, and yes, you see traffic, but you're watching passersby and, you know, horse and buggies and interesting shoppers and whatever, and or a water fountain or something. And in Atlanta, half of the time, you're sitting looking at a parking lot. It's very sad.
Yes.
Not in downtown so much, actually.
Right.
But
right.
Dan's looking at me like, not here. but, you know, around metro Atlanta.
And one of the things I never see down around downtown Atlanta is any proliferation of scooters or small motorcycles.
That's true.
And they're also very efficient, more, certainly more so than a car.
Yeah.
If you go out to San Francisco, there are quite a few streets downtown where there are parking areas designated. They're very dense parking, but the motorcycles congregate in those areas.
Right.
And they're sort of, you know, slid in there side by side.
Right.
But the folks use them regularly, and it promotes their use within the city.
Yeah, I think we should have some kind of contest, Dan, sponsored by CAP, where you give away a scooter.
There you go.
I think I could ride a Vespa in heels.
I think I could rock
Elizabeth,
a Vespa.
You'd look great
in heels.
On a Vespa. That's,
yeah, I totally have always wanted one of those. I think they're awesome. Okay, moving on. So, Elizabeth, you pulled a story about a certain branch of Georgian workers getting paid more than the average.
Well, I always like to keep up on who's making what kind of money doing what kind of activity. So it was interesting to see that, those...
Biomedical, agriculture, and biofuel industries. Those people working in those industries are better paid than the average Georgian, and they actually withstood the recession better. That's according to a new study by Georgia Bio, which is the trade association for the life sciences industry. So I guess the good news there is that if you're getting into college or coming out of college or thinking about getting some additional education, you should, and you're scientifically minded at all, you might want to look into those industries.
Right. And they're industries that are doing well and flourishing here in Atlanta and Georgia. So.
And I think there are also industries that sort of do good, which is appealing to a lot of people. You know, biomedical, agriculture, biofuel, those are all
right.
things people are interested in. So it makes sense that they would, those industries would sort of flourish even in tough times, don't you think?
Absolutely.
So just FYI for everybody who's listening and cares, the average salary in 2010 in that industry was $64,000 compared to $44,000 in other industries. All right. Here's a story that's touching my heart in a bad way. Sad, sad story. Georgians are now going to pay 8% sales tax for online purchases. Hold on a second.
I know. All you shoppers out there.
Oh, my God.
We knew it was coming. It was just a matter of when.
It's so sad, though. Because one of the best things about shopping online was you'd be like, oh, great, they don't have a brick-and-mortar store here. Click.
Right.
Purchase. I just saved 8%. And not anymore. Mm-hmm. Comments, retail guy?
Well, certainly there's going to be more pressure on the online retailers to offer something new and different to maintain the enticement that the online retailers enjoyed before because of that extra discount.
Right.
So there's going to be more pressure on the bottom line.
They should offer free shipping because I always feel like when I get free shipping, I'm getting a really great deal.
That's certainly an option that we see more often around Christmas
time. And that would be good for UPS too.
Yeah.
So
One of the things that
the
we hear
economy.
That's right.
That's coming along is we're expecting to see a significant amount of shop online but pick up at the store.
Yes.
That will be promoted rather heavily this Christmas season, more so than in the past. So we expect to see that along with things like layaway that can be combined with being in the brick-and-mortar environment now because it's not as much of a disadvantage to get there.
You know, it's interesting. I think what happens is when something new comes around, people, you know, get all excited and they don't necessarily – it's like a new relationship where you only see the good parts of the man or woman that you're in a relationship with, you know. And then after 6, 7 months, a year, 2 years, you go like, you know what? I don't like that burping. And could you pull your pants up a little or whatever it is, right?
Are you dating?
Yeah.
I know.
It's a whole, bad visual.
That's
bad,
a whole other visual. Show, Elizabeth. A whole other show. But you know, I think that's true with internet shoppers. You know, I think when internet shopping first came around, everybody was really excited and just spent their money. But I think internet shoppers are starting to get more savvy.
Yes.
And like for me personally, I started looking at the difference of the price in the brick and mortar store versus the price online. And I'm not silly enough anymore to assume they're going to be the same because they're not. And so you do have to factor in things like if they're offering free shipping, is it really free shipping? Because if you just go across right. the street to the store, it might be cheaper to begin with. You know, so there's all kinds of things like that now that people have to
Yeah, so one of the tools that the average shopper has now is their smartphone in their pocket so they can compare the price online while they're standing in the brick and mortar location.
Yes.
And
I've
then
done
they can
that.
And I've done that many times too, and I've gone up to the sales associate and said, "Look, the price online at your firm is 10% less. Would you match the price right here and now?"
And do they?
And then they've done it in every instance that I've tried.
See, I feel like some of the times I get the response of the you know, 20-something-year-old sales clerk looking at me like a deer in headlights going, "Well, the prices online are different."
Well, that, you know? They usually start with that. That's when you ask for the department manager, and then everybody caves in. So.
Yeah, and you have to be determined to make that happen. Yeah,
nice. You can be nice, but be firm. Yes.
Nice but firm.
Yes.
Nice but firm. But I think one of the problems, too, is that stores kind of shoot themselves in the foot because I do things like this. I walk into the retail store, and I see the price, and I go, "God, I think I saw it online cheaper." Mm-hmm. So then I go home, and I look online. And it wasn't actually cheaper because the shipping wasn't free.
Right.
And then I go, like, forget it. And I just don't buy the item because I'm so irritated by the time.
Yes. Right.
And so they're losing people altogether, I think. So anyway, it'll be interesting to see what the sales tax thing does to the online shopping market. Though I think we're only about the 10th state to do this. So it's still not a majority of the states.
No.
So it's unclear if the online retailers will.
But there is a precedent now. So it's coming. It's gonna spread quickly.
Yes, correct.
Well, like
a little virus.
A strong precedent.
You know, looking at big trends, though, I mean, just like the gas tax, right, is a declining revenue source for all states. As more sales shift to online, you know, they're getting a big hit, a bigger hit in terms of more consumers are buying more things online. So, you know, over time, that's only going to increase. And so I think as a matter of sustainability for, you know, governments and systems and to kind of balance some of the retailers would tell you to make it fair, to compete with somebody like an Amazon, you know, I think this trend will continue.
It's going to be interesting too, just because there's like a competing trends really in a way, because there is this trend to move online, but then there's also this trend to get local. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's going to end up being certain industries where we're really more concerned with getting local and supporting local business and, you know, independent providers of whatever it is, clothing, books, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then this flip side of convenience, and I just click three buttons and it comes in the mail, you know. So it's going to be interesting to come back. You guys will all have to come back in like 10 years so we can revisit the trend and see what happened.
There will be no stores. They'll be gone.
That'll be so sad.
No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, I don't know. I think because, you know, whenever I have to fill out a form, and it asks for hobbies, I always say to myself, can I put shopping? Does that count? Is that a hobby? Because it is sort of how I spend my free time. So does that count? I don't know.
You know, back just before the dot-com bust, 13, 14 years ago, there was so much rumor about how stores were dead.
Yeah.
They were going away because the internet was beginning to flourish and online was becoming the thing to do. And I think the average shopper found out that there are many items that they want to try out, they want to see, they want to feel, and they're just as likely to buy that item when they've got it in their hand than they are going home and ordering it online.
Yeah.
So if the brick and mortar location can offer a pleasant environment with the right types of incentives for customers, they're usually going to get the sale.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too. I think there's certain things that obviously, you know, record stores have gone away.
Sure.
Bookstores are sadly going away.
Bookstores are, you know, prime example. You don't need to have a bookstore. Really don't.
It's sad.
So, yeah.
Doomed. But anyway, on the good side of business, on the happy side, forget the sales tax.
Right.
Moving
Give
on.
Give us the upside here, Dana.
Crystal is moving to Atlanta. That's
from Chattanooga.
That was the upside.
Yeah, that's exciting. Come on, that's progress. That's
so Crystal's corporate headquarters moving from
Chattanooga.
Chattanooga, right?
Yeah,
yes.
To Atlanta in early 2013. It's only about 60 employees moving, but you know, maybe we'll get a better deal on our little Crystal
Burger.
They
announced exactly where they're.
Let me see if it says that here. I was just glancing at the story. I don't think it does say, no.
It's north side.
Not in the downtown area. Sorry, Dan.
Well, not Can't yet. We don't know.
But that's good. That's all.
Get them here. We'll take their, yeah, it's good. And maybe we'll get a better deal on our little Crystal Burgers, you know, in the middle of the night after we've had a few beers. I'm just saying. Maybe. It could happen. I really sound like if anyone is listening to this show for the first time, they're like, okay, she dates a guy that burps and doesn't pull his pants up. She drinks beer in the middle of the night and goes for Crystal. Like, I am a classy show host right here. This is a
we love you, Dana.
This is a classy
show.
The
kind of woman you want to introduce to mom.
That's right.
You know?
Completely. There's a reason I am still single. All right. Oprah Winfrey, can I even say her name? The OWN Network, has just signed a multi-year deal with Tyler Perry, which is also kind of a fun Atlanta story because Tyler Perry is an Atlanta, a proud son. We love having Tyler Perry here. And so now he's in business with Oprah, which is, I think, probably good for both of them. and kind of exciting. Maybe we'll get more own programming here in Atlanta, filmed here in Atlanta.
That's interesting.
Maybe they'll film Good Morning Atlanta for the OWN network with Tyler Perry as a guest. It could happen or not. Okay, let's move on to our guests. Enough of me being ridiculous, Elizabeth.
Well, you are fabulous in your ridiculousness, and I always enjoy discussing the headlines with you, Dana, so thanks for the news. Our guests have got a lot of great news for us. Let's start with Dan. Dan, Downtown Development Day is coming up November 7th. Tell us all about it.
Yeah, so Downtown Development Day is an event that Central Atlanta Progress has been doing for 10 years. This is our 10th anniversary. Every year it grows in number. I think last year we had about 600 folks, and these are folks that are interested in the development of the Central City. From a variety of perspectives, be it finance, be it real estate, be it brokerage, construction, law, government, and then just average folks that are just interested in the central city and where we're going next and the big projects, the next big things, so to speak. So the event will be at America's Mart. It is November 7th, 7:15 a.m. Start time. We'll do breakfast and networking. Program will start at 8, and again, it'll go to noon, and then after that, there'll be a lunch and learn component that people can do. That's an optional. You can that's a separate ticket, but it'll include a tour and lunch after the event itself. So all that said, we'll have a plenary session. Maria Vargas from the Department of Energy will be here to talk. I've talked on the show before. This Better Buildings Challenge, Atlanta Better Buildings Challenge, will be a component of the program, and I'm sure Maria will talk about that, really about how we're driving growth and revitalization through energy retrofits and improvements in efficiency. So that will be a portion of the program. We'll also do the economic impact and Atlanta design a Downtown Design Excellence Awards. And so these are two awards that it's a really kind of popular part of the program because we recognize some folks that are doing really great work in the community to improve the economic vitality of our downtown, but and also designed buildings and places, structures that are new and you know, kind of pushing the envelope in terms of design and architecture and whatnot in downtown. So and then we'll have breakout sessions, which will be there'll be a few. One related to financial institutions, so talking about commercial lending practices, and you know, we all know that things have changed a lot in the last few years. So should be, have a really awesome panel of bankers and people in the finance industry to talk about, you know, how do you Patrick, how do you start a new retail operation on the first floor of one of these office buildings? Or how do you do this? And how do you get the financing for these types of projects? So whatever you're kind of interested in, that would be a great panel. We'll have another one on the day of life in downtown. So people like me that actually live here and work down here, what's it like to live and work down here or to live down here? And a lot of people are curious about it, living closer to where they work. And so we want to have a panel that talks about, you know, what the amenities are and how folks, those of us that live downtown do it and how those of us that work downtown, what it's like on a daily basis. We'll have another panel on the impact of the millennial generation, especially on the streetcar line. So you've got Georgia State, you've got Edgewood, which is really kind of, gaining in popularity, especially with, younger folks. And so how, the millennial generation is going to interact with this new development and how developers, real estate folks can tap into that, understand what's going on and help to, kind of advance that. And then lastly, again, the Better Buildings Challenge, we'll have a whole separate panel on the BBC. So
talk again about who comes to this and who benefits from it, and what are sort of the takeaways?
Yeah, it's a pretty broad array of folks, but the central theme is people that are interested in the economic development of the central city. So if you're a lawyer that does real estate law or you know, does contract law, if you're a banker that or somebody in financial services that works in this space, if you're a resident that wants to know, hey, what new residential opportunities might be coming up in downtown, if you're a business owner that wants to know what are the big things that are coming up in downtown, like the multimodal passenger terminal and the streetcar? How are these things going to affect me? So there's really kind of a broader array of people, and we try to cater the event to that broad array by having different kind of breakouts. And and then the one portion I didn't mention was we have an expo, the Development Expo, which is kind of a opportunity for folks to have booths and network and talk about their companies, about their properties, about their products or their government agency, and so it's another just kind of networking driven component that's also really popular.
Excellent.
So, yeah.
So it's been going on for 10 years.
Yeah, this is the 10th annual. So last year was my first, and our annual meeting is in March is great. It's kind of a 10,000 foot view, but if this program, if you're a business person, if you're really interested in the nuts and bolts of how business gets done, how development happens, what the next big things are, Development Day is definitely the place to get that kind of info.
Yeah, and everybody, I think, likes to do a little networking at these
things. Oh, yeah. And at the end of the day, I think if you ask, probably 8 out of 10 people would say they're there to network. And they get a lot of info. They get a lot out of it. But, it's the bringing people together and seeing familiar faces, meeting new folks, and establishing, building a relationship. It's huge. And we want to keep those components of the program.
So sustainability has become really this big part of the city of Atlanta's central strategy going forward as we look to building
huge for the
city.
Mayor. Yeah.
It's interesting. I mean, we've done several panels on sustainability here, and then to see it as really a central component of a day like this.
Right.
What are some of the things people are saying about the sustainability and what's going on in terms of development?
So Central Atlanta Progress and downtown, we have a whole new program, a division of CAP now called Green Source, which deals solely with sustainability. We have Lauren DeFort, who's the director of that program, who focuses full time on sustainability efforts as they relate to downtown. So the Better Buildings Challenge, the Atlanta Better Buildings Challenge, is a big component of that. So we're now branching outside of downtown and getting more buildings to sign on, more partners. And these are buildings that are signing on to help us reduce energy efficiency, reduce energy consumption by 20% by 2020. And that's a national goal set by the U.S. Department of Energy. And so and right now the word is that we are winning. So we've got more. I don't know how they define all those metrics, but right now, among all the cities that are participating, we've got the most buildings, the most square footage that are reduced their energy consumption. So
I love it. You're like so excited. We're winning.
We're winning.
I had a Charlie Sheen flashback there.
I know, right? We're winning. I know we talked last time about Atlanta, getting this rating of, fifth dirtiest city or whatever. When we win, we want to talk about
That's
it.
That's right.
So. Super.
Though I did hear something, I think, in one of our panels where they said the goal of 20% reduction by 2020 is going to be tight. I mean, it's going to be tough to accomplish.
Sure, it's tough. But the good thing is we've got major players on board. We've got the Georgia Pacifics and the Coca-Colas and the big buildings like this that are willing to kind of come on and show leadership. And then now you're seeing a lot of the smaller buildings as well. So Development Day is one of those kind of opportunities to talk to people about what's going on and maybe influence some folks that are maybe on the fence about getting their building involved and getting into this sector somehow. We try to use it as an opportunity to advance it. But we're 2012. We've got 8 years.
Bob, what do you hear when you're talking to companies and recruiting them to locate in Atlanta? I know the chambers are very involved in all of this stuff as well.
I actually head up our clean tech We have a Clean Tech Leadership Council for clean technology, which, you know, encompasses a lot of manufacturing pieces as well, but certainly green consumer products, you know, all those things, Energy Star type products fit into that. But Brookings Institute ranked Atlanta the seventh best, most largest clean tech industry in the United States, and we're actually ranked as the most diverse, so of all cities in the
we
country.
We win.
So, yeah, we won again.
Right?
Winning.
That's good.
You know, speaking of which, we just finished the tax holiday for energy appliances, energy efficient appliances. I bought some. Just saying.
It's a little retail stimulate.
Hobby number one.
I know. Well, it was like we needed a washer dryer anyway, and it's a classic. You talk about layaway. We didn't really want it right now, but with the tax savings and, you know, and we did the comparison shopping. We went to a couple stores. We did the online thing, and then we just went and just saved our little 8%,
yeah,
at least on the washer.
Every little bit helps.
Right?
It really does.
Right. So back to Development Day. Again, the date is?
It is November 7th.
And
at America's Mart.
At America's Mart, yep. 7:15 a.m.
Right. And AtlantaDowntown.com, you will see a link for Development Day. From there, you should be able to find somewhere to click and get tickets. And Ticket cost for CAP members, $45 a person. For non-members, $55.
Good excuse to join CAP if
right?
you're not already
yeah.
a member.
You know, why not?
Why not?
Why not go ahead? And
yeah.
In fact, as the membership guy, I can tell you that if you'd like to join now, I'd probably throw in a couple free tickets.
So. Oh, look at
look
that.
At that. Know,
right here.
Right?
And yeah. Say you heard it on Business Radio X.
And, yeah.
I'm just saying.
Sure. Right? And then we'll get you on the show.
That's right.
Full circle.
That's right. Okay, so 45 for members, 50
five
for non-members.
Right. The Development Expo, if you want to have a booth at the Expo, $150 for members, $250 for non-members. That'll include a couple tickets.
So. Okay, and so that's still available.
And that is still available. I've got about 20 slots.
And that's a good deal because if you get a couple free tickets,
it pays
for itself.
Not much, yeah. It really is everybody. Most of the folks that participate in the Expo come back year after year because they really, you know, develop some relationships, meet some new people that they you know, we're glad to meet. So,
sold. I think
I'm
we're going.
There.
I know.
I think we might need a booth, Dana. Hey,
just so people can, you know, partake in our celebrity, you know.
A segue and a scooter next to it.
We'll let you guys broadcast.
Broadcasting live.
Yeah, right?
We should do that. That would be a lot of fun. We'll talk after the show, Dan.
That's awesome. All right, sweet. November 7th. See you there. Downtown Development Day. So let's move to Tiaca now. Bob Perdiera is going to tell us about the 2012 Tiaca Conference. This just took place, right, Bob? Last week?
This was last week. Yeah.
And this is huge. This is a big deal. So
it's a big deal. Yeah,
for people that might not be familiar with the air cargo conference scene.
Right.
Give them kind of the down low.
Well,
here.
There's a lot of drinking that goes on at conferences, international air cargo. You
I
know
love
about
that.
The you know, the hospitality that you have on airplanes, so that carries over to air cargo conferences
nice.
As well. Nice wines from different countries. So
everything's served
part.
In small bottles, I take it.
Yeah, that's right. Very small, so you can carry on.
That's right.
But no, the International Air Cargo Association has been around for about 12 or 14 years, I think. I guess 26. This is our 26th annual conference. But Tiaca is basically the Olympics of air cargo. And so we had to bid, just like any city, to try and win this. And it rotates. It's every 2 years. And it goes from Asia, Europe, Americas. And it rotates every two. And so Atlanta decided with the Hartsfield-Jackson Atlanta National Airport, UPS, Delta Airlines, and the Metro Atlanta Chamber, we said, and the ACV, Atlanta Convention and Visitors Bureau, decided we wanted to recruit this conference to Atlanta because our airport is so critical, you know, to our future growth. And certainly air cargo helps companies, manufacturers, and retailers move their product around the world and reach customers. So we went out to recruit this show to Atlanta and took about 5 years, but it just happened last week. And so it was kind of a culmination of a lot of work, but it brought about 2,000 air cargo professionals to Atlanta. And 4,000. And, you know, the economic impact is probably about a couple $1 million when you add in the hotel rooms and restaurants and all the things that we do. And,
right.
you know, we had a reception every night on our rooftop over there overlooking the park from Sunday through Wednesday. And so it was very busy. But it was a great win for the city. And, you know, Atlanta didn't become the capital of the new South just because of passengers. It was freight, really, that built the city, and rail freight initially when we used to be called Terminus. And
that's
so
right.
Air cargo, really, we evolved from a rail hub to an air hub, and we continue to be a global supply chain hub. So, you know, all these things are important, but particularly air cargo is very important for companies to help them reach markets and helps our businesses here in Atlanta. But Mayor Reed was prominently involved and welcomed all the guests, and Secretary LaHood, Secretary of Transportation, came as well and did an opening keynote, and so it was a great show.
A lot of key players there, a really impressive lineup.
I was going to say, there's obviously all the benefits you said of having a big conference here in the city, but are there long-term benefits of having that specific conference? Is that going to attract more cargo carriers to come here?
Yeah, actually, I mean, the point is, and I guess with Mayor Reed and the airport, is to recruit new carriers to fly, both passenger and cargo. Certainly, this one, this show is focused on cargo. They announced a new service that begins actually Thursday night. Well, that's actually Friday morning. 2:20 a.m. will fly in. Air Cargo Germany is going to be flying two flights a week. That announcement was made last Tuesday. But, yes, we have 9 of the top 10 air cargo carriers currently flying here. The only one of the top 10 that doesn't is Emirates Airways, and we've met multiple times with them. The mayor has met with them, and Mayor Reed. And so it is all about getting new carriers. And you know, it's really about creating these, you know, streets connections. If you don't have a direct connection with a certain country, certainly it's less likely that business is going to take place. So when you open these trade lanes, good things happen. Both people start to connect and think about doing businesses and working together, and trade begins to flow. And the economic impact of that is very significant.
And with that cargo coming in here, is the road situation, the T-SPLOS stuff, does that affect that? I mean, are people going like, wait, you're not improving your roads? You're not, is that an issue for people?
Yeah, companies look at that and ask that question and say, what are you doing? You know, what's your plan? And I think when you look at it in the, you know, granted, we lost an important battle there, I think, with T-SPLOS, a great opportunity that was lost. But when you look at it in the whole, I mean, we have a Port of Savannah that's ready to be deepened, that's on the top of the list for the Department of Transportation and the president. You've got an international terminal that was just added.
Right.
Fifth runway was added just before that, a few years prior.
Right.
The transportation referendum passed in 3 regions of the state. Now, you compare that to other states and other places, that's a lot of movement and a lot of progress. Certainly, companies do care. Then, you know, congestion is a friction that reduces, you know, their ability to get product quickly. You know, when you order that bag online, you want it there the next day, right, for free.
Of course,
shipping.
Right.
Or 2-day, right, if you're getting it free. So that kind of thing, you know, you need an efficient transportation system to enable that to happen.
Sure.
And make that promise possible. So congestion is an issue, and, you know, we just need to make sure we're addressing it.
Yeah. Well, I guess the good news is the more air cargo that comes through here, the better the economy, the more money we have to fix the roads.
Mm-hmm.
So in a simplified manner.
Well, it's high-value goods, too. Air cargo is only about 4% of the volume, but it's 39% of the value.
Interesting.
So it's all the high price, you know, medical scanning machines, you know,
yeah.
Cars, full, you know, race cars, race horses, iPads, iPhone 5s, you know, all these high value things that have to fashion.
Right.
Yes, yeah, so I have some clients that move some of their very expensive fashion items by air because they feel it's that much of an advantage to get them out to the stores
faster,
even a couple days faster than a truck.
Interesting.
They'll pay a premium for that. So, yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And very important.
There's a lot of seasonality with fashion, so air cargo comes in, especially on your higher lines, where they want to make sure that new season hits the shelf exactly the right time.
Interesting.
And so it becomes a very important part. But companies do ask.
So basically, I should hang out at the airport, and if anything happens to fall off the truck or
the
plane.
There was a half an aircraft of Jimmy Choo shoes.
See?
The other day.
See?
And the ladies were all asking for if there was any damaged goods that were
left. Yeah, maybe I could just snag
side.
Me a pair of Jimmy Choo's. I'd be okay with that.
So the trend of supply chain and logistics, I mean, obviously this is a big hub for that industry sector here in Atlanta. What are some of the job trends that you're seeing in terms of continuing to fill the pipeline?
Well, my role, I recruit new supply chain and advanced manufacturing companies, and as well as clean technology, and kind of head up those areas. And we're seeing a lot more manufacturing, you know, the backshoring, nearshoring terms, with the low dollar, the increasing wages in China, the high cost of fuel, the risks of all the shocks around the world that are making it more and more challenging to manage a global supply chain. Companies want to source closer to where they're going to sell the product. And so that's good. That bodes well for the United States. And we're seeing a lot of manufacturing come back. You've seen just recently here at Caterpillar announced a new plant coming back from Japan up there towards Athens. Baxter, it's not a reshoring, but, you know, Baxter, talking about bioscience, new plant here that was announced this year. So a lot of our total volume that we see, we've seen about 300 projects so far this year, new companies that have expressed an interest to open a facility, and about almost half of that, 49% of that, is either supply chain or manufacturing related. So very robust and good activity. And, you know, despite we're nowhere near back where we were pre-recession levels, but, you know, we can see a lot of activity in companies looking to make investments.
So it's interesting because there's kind of like two differing trends there with the increasing global nature of the economy, but also the big slowdown in Asia with what's going on in China and all that economies around in that arena. So you're seeing more reshoring of manufacturing, mm-hmm. as well as
well, certain products and you know, and Pat will tell you, I mean, if there's a high labor content in a product, it might make sense to make that offshore. But if there's a high value add, like, again, you know, the laptop you have there or the new iPhone 5, you know, some of these things where there's high value add machinery, you know, CAT scan machines, MRI machines, these kind of things where you have a lot of automation and a lot of technical, also intellectual property. You know, mm-hmm. once you start making things like that offshore, their laws there are less favorable to the inventor, and you're more susceptible to copy. So all these things factor in, and
yeah, trademark is not really
exactly. There's a lot of you know, what is it, Kate Spade bags, and
sure,
you know, I lots of stories from your friends, I'm sure, about the great bag they scored when they were in Shanghai.
Yeah,
yeah. So
Singapore,
customs
perhaps.
Folks don't like that.
You don't do your shopping in Singapore.
It's very, very expensive. Yeah. What else? What else do we need to know before we give Pat? Poor Pat's been sitting over there quietly waiting. Waiting his turn.
I'm in. This is great.
Jumping
I'm
in.
This.
This is good. Absolutely. I mean, we're kind of talking here about retail, so
yes.
Let's segue right into. Well, if people want to find out more about this event or get more involved in what the Metro Atlanta Chamber is doing, first of all, Bob. Where can they reach out?
Yeah, go to our website, metroatlantachamber.com, and we have some pictures and some videos that are up from the conference. And notably also that same week, we recruited another conference called the Council of Supply Chain Management Professionals, their annual global conference, that same week together. So we had about 8,000 professionals the same year. So we continue to attract conferences in these key areas. But, you know, certainly supply chain, that industry, we're very strong with UPS here, 10,000 folks. Georgia Tech has the number one program in the country. And so, you know, it's a strategic industry, and we continue to work to attract it. But.
And silly question before we move too far away from TIAACA, but as it, you said, it rotates in terms of location. So, mm-hmm. and it happens every 2 years. Mm-hmm. So 2 years from now, when it's in the next location, does a contingent from Atlanta go to participate?
Yes, we will. We go usually. They'll have a booth, not always have a booth, but most of the time they'll have a booth. The next one is in Incheon in Seoul.
Nice.
And the year,
you
2 years after that is Paris.
Are you in? I can go to Paris and work the booth for you if you like.
Okay.
Just putting it out there.
Talk.
Okay. So we still go because we still want to attract that cargo
absolutely.
Business. Okay. Interesting.
I like it. I love logistics.
Yeah. Very awesome. Interesting stuff. It's when you're buying that, clicking that button or walking into that store to buy those, you know, Jimmy Choo's or whatever, you don't think about all the stuff that goes on behind the scenes.
Right.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that retail experience now, Pat. Give us your background and how you found yourself in the current role, because you've done a lot of other things throughout your career that you've learned all of this stuff that you now consult on. So
Yes.
How to tell your story.
Sure, sure. Really, there were two major chapters in my sordid professional past. I spent almost 10 years as a controller in the manufacturing area.
Okay.
And I was looking for a change, and an opportunity arose to assist a boutique retail consulting organization with a very large client based up in Minneapolis. I'll leave the name unsaid, but you can guess, who had a need for somebody who had a very strong financial background. And so I took a leap of – it was genuinely a leap of faith and joined the small retail consulting firm, knowing virtually nothing about retail but having a very strong financial background. And I loved the work. And we had a fantastic engagement with the retailer. Everything worked very well. And my agreement with the retail consulting group was that I would certainly expect to stay and have a career with them, but I needed for them to spend some time and teach me the retail business, which I was able to learn very quickly. And that was 30 years ago. I've enjoyed every day since then. So I've worked for a couple of very large organizations, worked my way up from junior consultant all the way to senior partner. And back in 2004, I left my local employer here in Atlanta, one of the larger private retail consulting firms in the United States and across the world, and started my own practice and continued delivering the same type of product. So we offer our retail clients strategic assistance, analytical assistance, and also operational assistance.
Okay.
So we help them to determine what they should do to analyze their business more efficiently and more appropriately so that they can determine that strategy will fit or not fit. And then we help them with the tactics of making the changes in their organization. And we work primarily in the United States, and there are quite a few of us. All of us are spread across the U.S. because we never know where our next client is going to be. The profile of our client base is very similar to that of the larger retail consulting organizations I worked for in the past. We tend to focus on retailers that do 300, 400 million and more in sales per year, usually not the small firms. And one of the big changes that has occurred for us, and I started this process actually 4 years ago and was interrupted by a very strong stream of work, and I had to shelve the work until just a few months ago and rejoin this effort. But we continuously get inquiries from very small retail organizations that don't know what to do next. They need help, and they can't afford a large retail consulting firm to help them out, and they can't even afford our fee structure, which is less than a lot of our competitors, but it's still healthy from their perspective. And so what we've decided to do, we being my team and I, was to create a seminar series for small retailers so that we could bring to them over the course of a day or two. The first round is just set up to be a day, but a full day nonetheless. A whole series of conversations, interactive conversations, of course, led by our team, that will address the key issues that the small retailers are facing. And so the first of those seminars is going to occur on October 24th, right here in Atlanta. I'm doing it close to home so that we can tweak it and test it, and it'll make the logistics a little bit easier to handle. It's going to be up at the La Quinta Inns and Suites on Peachtree Dunwoody Road, just north of Hammond Drive. And we're going to talk about topics such as what are the key characteristics of an effective retailer. You know, what do they know? What do you need to know? What do you need to focus on? What is customer service, and how does that really play itself out in the retail environment? What do you need to do? How do you measure customer service? How do you improve customer service? How do you maintain good customer service? That's a term that I actually don't believe. I've gotten sort of jaded over the years, and I'm a terrible shopper because when I make a transaction in a retail environment now, I'm not paying any attention to the transaction. I'm paying attention to the interaction with the associates,
sure,
whether the goods are in stock.
We're like benchmarking them on a series of 12 different metrics.
I am going through this list in my head you would not believe. And I purposely don't even say anything to the associates to see if they have the presence of mind to go through the type of script that they know they're supposed to go through with
right.
the customers. And quite a few of them don't.
Sure.
You know, I love a transaction when the associate never makes eye contact with you.
Ugh.
I've had that where literally you go through the entire transaction and not once did they even look in your eyes.
I know.
And it presents you with a feeling that this is just not a warm place.
No, they don't care.
Yeah, they don't care, and I know they don't care, and I'm not sure I want to come back.
Yeah.
Which is a real loss for the retailer. And those are the types of things that we want to bring to life in our seminar and teach these smaller retailers that these things, I know you've heard them before, but they really are very important. And these are the things that the larger retailers that exist today have conquered in large part, and they continuously have to readdress them. So they ebb and flow in terms of how good they are. But
right, it's interesting. You expect that type of a scripted dialogue with somebody who works for a big box retailer, mm-hmm. right? You go into a Best Buy and you know that they've been through new associate training class.
Absolutely, right.
And, you know, et cetera. But you go into a boutique or, you know, a store that only has one or two locations and it's not as polished and professional
right.
of an experience. Now, it could be more warm and fuzzy because mm-hmm. they've got the ability to kind of go off script or do their own thing, but it can also fall down because you haven't hit kind of those basics mm-hmm. in the training class.
Right, right. Yes, I mean, those scripts do exist. I've written many of them that are out there in America. And
yeah, I've delivered them. I mean,
sure.
training classes
yeah,
to new hires.
Absolutely, they're there.
I think one of the advantages in the bigger stores when it's a chain, and they do have the ability to have a training department, certainly, and they
sure.
can do things like have a contest, let's say, among the stores, that
mm-hmm.
the store that gets the highest customer service ratings gets something. And so all the employees are incented in whatever way to be on their best behavior.
Yes.
But when you're a single retail location, you can't measure that. They have to get caught, essentially, by
right,
the boss
right.
or by a customer that complains to the boss.
And if I'm able to build on that, one of the things we teach them is to catch your associates doing something right.
Yeah.
Not wrong.
Yeah.
And then build on that because it's a much more positive message.
Right.
You still need to catch them. I agree completely.
Yeah.
Catch them doing something
yeah,
right.
Yeah. I mean, I had a retail store for some time and in the aughts. Is that how we say it? So, and, you know, I had a few adults that worked for me that were great and I could rely on them and I could show up and they would be doing the right thing all the time and
yes.
I always got good feedback. But I also had some high school kids.
Yeah.
And there would be times when I would drive by at night and I would park the car like off to the side and go, and I would not believe some of the stuff they were doing.
Right.
I mean, it was ridiculous. And, you know, you had to catch them. And once I caught them one or two times, then they knew I might come around. They maybe would do it a little bit less, but mm-hmm. whew, it was, I mean, I actually caught a kid, get this, sitting on the roof, like smoking a cigarette on the roof of the house. Like I could have been sued and, you know, like
yes.
would have been a disaster.
Right.
I was like, what are you thinking?
And when he falls off, then he owns your shop.
Right. I mean, it was like, oh yeah, 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 yeah. So, right. you know, it's much, I think the challenges, and I guess what I was going to ask you is, do you see that the challenges are distinctly different between small, you know, maybe medium sized firms and large firms?
Yes and no. I think that the same types of challenges exist. I think that the approach that's taken is a little different. And to Elizabeth's point, I mean, the larger retailers have more resources and they've had more time. Usually it takes time for them to grow to that size. So they've
right.
been able to learn and develop.
They've systematized.
Yes, they systematize. They know the types of things. They hire folks like us to come in and assist them to create these things. Although they do, as I said, they need to continually maintain these programs. So the small retailers often don't know what they don't know. So one of our goals is to teach them these things that they need to be aware of. And then show them how to make them work.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about things such as customer service. We discussed that. Inventory management. How do you maintain the appropriate inventory level? What's the math behind that? I'll bet probably 90% of them don't know how to do that. They've never heard of any kind of SKU rationalization process. They don't know how to stratify their inventory and when to get rid of it. They don't have a clearance strategy. They don't have performance metrics that are useful, and they don't have good systems behind those as well. So we'll discuss some basic types of techniques that they can utilize to maintain their businesses and help them to grow with the intention of them becoming a Macy's down the road. You know, hopefully they will. Some of them will be able to do that.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I hope we can play a role in that growth.
Very interesting. So, again, the conference is coming up.
Conference is coming up October 24th.
Okay.
It's a full-day conference. It's $249 at the door until the 20th, and then it goes up $10.
Okay.
So a little bit of an incentive to sign up early. If I may, the website?
Please.
For registration and more information is seminars, with an S at the end, seminars.com. AtlantaRetailConsulting.com. And that'll take you to another website. You'll be able to see all the information about the seminar. There's a click here to register button. All the registration's done online. And we've got room for 85 folks. We'd love to have as many folks join us as they can.
I think that it sounds really great. I mean, having been a small retailer, I know I definitely could not have afforded the type of consulting services that you're talking about. And I might have still been in business if I had just gone to your conference.
You know, and there's a money back guarantee. If you're not satisfied, I'll write you a check. I'll give you your money back. That's in writing, right on our website. We're happy to do it. I'm completely confident that won't be an issue. Clearly this is a great time of year because as we're going into holiday season, when the average retailer can't afford to continue the mistakes they're making, there are going to be some things that are too big for them to change quickly. But there are going to be a lot of ideas that they can employ right away that will certainly make a difference with their top line and their bottom line.
And for a lot of small retailers, certainly, and the big ones too, this is it. Like November and December, this is where they make their money for the year.
Typically about 40%, yes.
Yeah.
So it's very, very important
very
for them
timely.
To pay attention. So hopefully we can help.
All right. Let's just, again, recap all these events. So Tiaka's happened, but if you want to hear about it, if you want to read more about it and hear what's going on in the cargo industry, the Metro Chamber website is the place to go?
Yes, MetroAtlantaChamber.com.
Okay. And for the retail event, one more time, the website?
Okay, seminars with an S, .AtlantaRetailConsulting.com.
And Development Day, Dan?
That's right, AtlantaDowntown.com. You'll see a link for Downtown Development Day.
Elizabeth, do you want to invite people over to your house for an event? just to make this a full round table here. Drinks at Elizabeth's.
Party at Elizabeth's.
Awesome. So I think that's about wrapping it up for us, huh?
Absolutely. Okay. Great show. Thanks so much, Dana, and to our awesome guests. You've been listening to Good Morning Atlanta on Business Radio X, a proud 2012 member of Central Atlanta Progress. Learn more at AtlantaDowntown.com. Thanks again to our sponsor, World Trade Center Atlanta. And for Dana and I, we'll talk to you next week.